This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 77. We'll talk to Rob and Derek from GetDrip.com, live from the Build Conference, April 30th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
All right, AC, how's it going?
Doing good, man. A little sore, a little tired, but doing good.
That's the life of a conference goer, it seems. We had a little late night last night, I take it.
Late night and a unique experience at a conference where I'm sure that some of our listeners listen to Jeremy Fake's Office 365 Developer podcast, which I know either one episode coming around here, I'm sure going to start getting a lot of questions about the fact that I got hit by a car yesterday, which is not true at all.
How did that? Well, they ripped your jeans, right?
I was bumped to the ground by a car that ran the red light and threw, and I got knocked to the ground. Not bad, but having a laptop bag on your backpack and your back, the weight of it threw me down and kind of, ripped my jeans, which is really frustrating because I'm going straight from here to Ignite, so I only had two pairs of jeans.
Pantless at a conference, never a good scene.
No. I figured I'd do. Who was that guy? Don Box that did tech ed one time in an entire session just in his boxers and never came up from behind the podium. He had a t-shirt on, just his boxers, did the whole thing from a podium, and he's like, I'm doing it my way, and no one knew what was going on, and then he walked out to answer a question, and everybody's like, whoa, hello.
Well, I've done a session in a skin-tight golem suit before, so, I mean, that's the next step, right?
With the little, foam animation balls that they check.
Stuck to you, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty embarrassing.
Yeah, how about
developers,
you?
Developers, eh?
How are you this morning?
Oh, tired. It's been a busy, busy week. We had a great keynote at Build yesterday that kicked off. We're going to talk about that a little more later on. But it's just been super busy. Lots going on at the conference. Going really well, but it's a lot to put on. So I'm kind of still suffering and barely awake.
So everybody listening, we're sitting here in the conference center. We're in the partner area where they do all the meals, but they're doing no meals right now. So you'll hear a little bit of background noise, but this is probably the most quiet part of the conference center.
Well, everybody's now. This is day two and
two, yeah.
And everybody's in the keynote right now. So we thought we'd take the opportunity to come and talk to some two interesting fellows that we've listened to and followed for a little while, and we thought take the opportunity to get on the show. These two run a SaaS business called Drip, or it's at getdrip.com. And so why don't we hand over and let them introduce themselves. So first, Rob.
Sure, I'm Rob Walling. I'm a .NET developer from way back, actually. I did .NET from about 2001 to 2000, let's say 10 or 11. And now I'm co-founder with Derek of Drip, which is marketing automation software, or email marketing software, as some folks put it.
And I'm Derek Reimer, and started Drip with Rob about 2.5 years ago. I also cut my teeth on Basic and then VB6, so I have a little Microsoft.
Ooh,
a little Microsoft in my roots.
Yeah.
lately I've been developing on Ruby and Ruby on Rails, and that's basic tech stack for Drip.
Gotcha.
Very cool.
So what is Drip? Explain for our audience a little bit about what Drip is. Both AC and I have a little bit of background in this and think it's fascinating piece of software, but for our audience, what is Drip and what does it do?
I guess we also have to say disclaimer that we're both customers too. So.
Yeah, we are customers of Drip. Yeah, we use Drip.
So, fanboy, but let you guys kind of explain what it is.
Drip is marketing automation software, and that term may or may not be something your listeners are familiar with, but basically starts at the core with typical email marketing, which is, you have your list of subscribers, you send emails to them to, whatever marketing messaging you're trying to get across. And marketing automation has an additional layer on top of that. So features such as lead scoring and tracking the behavior that users are taking, actions they're taking on your website in order to cater your messaging better.
Yeah, and actions folks are taking inside your app. If you have whether it's a web app or a desktop app, we have a full REST API, and folks can ping up and say, hey, someone just created their first project in your application. Ping them an email that says, hey, here's how to do a project.
There were some things too that I'll admit that when I first started, I guess a little bit of background, CJ and I became aware of you guys through a podcast that Rob, you co-host, Startups for the Rest of Us. And it's all about the concept of being a micropreneur or a solo founder. So I always had the idea you had to build up a big company to be able to have a lifestyle type business or revenue to be able to provide for your family, but you can be a solo kind of person. But I know this came out of a lot of the experience you had from doing that same kind of a thing and saying there's a gap in the market. And when I first got into this, I always saw a lot of like, you know, email marketing. I delete, I can't stand it. But then I listened more to it. And I think that listeners are going to have may have the same kind of outlook that I had on it, in the sense that I thought that email marketing was just annoying and it wasn't very effective. But this isn't just email marketing, it's very personalized. And so I found that one of the things that Drip does, and there's other products that do this as well, but one of the things is like a scenario that really hit home with me was that if I sign up for a trial for a product, I may go download it, I may not go use it right away. With a tool like this, you can check to see, have you gone through and logged into the site now? Have you gone through and you know, connected it to, like if you're using something like Buffer, have you connected to Facebook or Twitter? Have you sent your first message out? And each time you kind of do that, you're moving farther along the app. But if they're in a trial and they've just signed up for an account and they just kind of went in, they haven't done anything, they're not getting much value. And it's in the person who's providing the service that's trying to get you to pay for it, it's in their best interest to get you really using it, getting value out of the product as quick as possible, so that when that trial comes up and you're going to get that first charge or have to pay for it the first time, you don't want them to say, yeah, I'm not really getting the value out of this, right? So this is that was one of the stories or the scenarios that really hit home with me, that something like this really made sense.
Yeah, so I guess like from a software developer's perspective, because we're here at Build, we're talking to a whole bunch of Microsoft developers, right, about mobile development and web development and Windows development and all that sort of stuff. Coming from a developer's perspective, why is Drip interesting to developers? Like, why should they care about marketing automation? What probably don't they know?
Mm. Right. Yeah, that's a good question. To be honest, if you're selling your own products, or if you're somehow involved in the sales process at all, or the marketing of your app, the front end, just gathering folks on your website and being able to start building a relationship is very important. And it's most people do email marketing really poorly, which is why, AC, you just said that you deleted everything. And mm-hmm. So when you get messages from whatever, Dell or Verizon or these big companies, I delete all of them too. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about very personalized stuff that when you get it, you're like, holy crap, this is really cool.
They know me.
Exactly. Yeah. And so
damn it, Google.
So kind of the first thing is that marketing automation in general, and not just Drip, I'm not here hawking my product, just marketing automation in general helps you sell more products. Yeah. You know? And then the second part of it is, like AC said, in the trial part, you can get more people onboarded. So once you get folks who are actually using your product, you get more of them to become customers ultimately.
Right.
And you can segment them, and you know, it just allows you to know more about your customers and what they're doing and be able to communicate with them intelligently.
Well, I mean, you can think like being a .NET developer or being a Windows developer, the class of people that are here at Build, let's say they're going to use one of those component suites from like a Telerik or an Infragistics or DevExpress. You're working with the designers and you're trying to get some stuff done with the designers. I mean, that could send out little beacons back to DevExpress or Infragistics, one of those guys, that they can turn around and say, oh, you're using our grid. Did you know about this? And you could proactively send some stuff, the useful things, not just, you know, not billboard type messages. It's more that walking up to a booth to where you can actually have an interaction with someone. You're able to have a more engaging, kind of personalized interaction with that customer. So it was another thing that I thought could help.
Yeah, I think at Build, we've got a lot of corporate developers and a lot of enterprise developers. And what really interests me with Drip is, you guys have come at it from the entrepreneur angle of like getting more sales and driving leads and communicating better with customers and engaging with them. But I also think there's like a really interesting second angle to it, which is on the corporate side and enterprise side, it's some of the crummiest software on the planet, right? It's the crusty old VB6 apps out there and terrible old internal systems that take people a long time to learn when they join a company, right? And so one of the ideas I have pushing Drip in sort of an enterprise use, or marketing automation and enterprise use, is internal marketing. So when somebody joins the company and onboards, they sort of get put in the funnel, so to speak. They're a lead, right, of potentially becoming a user for a piece of software internally. And you could sort of help them through onboarding on an enterprise software or corporate software. Like, have you used this feature, or watching what they're doing and instrumenting that, and then helping them sort of get through that funnel of having to onboard into all these complicated systems. And so I think it's, like, from my perspective on the enterprise software side, I see really, like, nobody's doing this. Right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's really doing this internally, and I see a tool like Drip being really interesting in that space as well.
Or even like the onboarding process. You go work for a company like Microsoft, you come in. I mean, how do you do this? You got to go sit through this orientation. You got to go here. You got to set this up. You got to set that up. I mean, you could sit there and move them between different campaigns. And once you achieve this and do that. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a cool scenario, a much more personalized scenario than saying, you know, here's a packet that you've got to go through, or here's an app that you have to go download to go install on your phone. And this is going to walk you through the onboarding process where doing email, setting up emails, email campaigns. I mean, that's something that HR can set up, not having to go get IT involved to build up all this kind of all that junk. So
it's how SharePoint became huge, right? Because IT didn't need to get involved.
You had to say the bad word. I'm just kidding.
Anyway, so Drip is a SaaS product, right? Web-based SaaS product. You can go find out at getdrip.com if you want to go read more about it. But tell us a little bit about the background and how you've built it. It's a cloud-based piece of software. Lots of our listeners are sort of quite cloud-friendly people. But what led you to go build it in the cloud? Did you contemplate building it in a set of servers you hosted yourself? Did you even do that and then move it to something else? Or give us a little bit of background about how Drip is built and the cloud.
How was it born?
Sure, yeah. So we started out on Amazon Web Services. We evaluated a bunch of the different options early on. We looked at Rackspace, we looked at Amazon and other lesser known hosting providers. And ultimately we landed on Amazon because of the ability to scale up our infrastructure quickly as needed. But we knew that eventually we would need quite a bit of infrastructure to do everything we need to do in the background. Yeah. But we obviously early on were looking to keep our infrastructure costs as low as possible. So that's the major benefit we saw in a cloud platform like Amazon Web Services. And also they've built up quite an ecosystem of interrelated products. So, you know, we have our DNS hosted with them, which hooks in seamlessly into your instances and your load balancers. And so kind of they've got all the pieces you need without having to cobble together, you know, a bunch of different services to handle.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you guys are VM based in AWS.
Yes.
So IaaS EC2.
IaaS on EC2, yeah. And but you guys are devs at heart, right? Did you have to figure out all this infrastructure stuff yourselves, or did somebody come teach you how to do AWS networking, for example?
It's kind of been a learning process. I don't really have an ops background. Neither of us have a super strong ops background, but for me, it's just kind of been learn as we go. And obviously, when we were starting out, we just had a couple servers, and things have grown organically from there. So we've been able to, it's not like we overnight had to figure out how to scale up to the 12 servers that we have now running Drip. But I think one of the main reasons why I was driven to go with the VM approach as opposed to the more abstracted platform as a service approach was I want to understand everything that's going on behind the scenes. I've heard some mixed reviews about unexpected behavior that pops up or just unexplained performance problems on platforms like Heroku. And I just didn't want that additional chaos factor.
Extra baggage.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good reason. Sounds like you're saying that with on the IaaS versus PaaS. It's a new one. Coin that one this week. That'll be in tomorrow's keynote. IaaS versus PaaS, it was more of a personal preference than it was like a specific technology kind of a preference. It was more of a we feel more comfortable with this approach, because I guess we've all worked with deploying software on servers, on physical servers. Mm-hmm. The next step is to kind of go IaaS. So is that accurate or is that fair? Or
I would say so. And it was, you know, it was 2.5 years ago when we were making this decision, and the tools at that time were a little different. Especially like Heroku, we had just recently heard. Heroku was a natural choice since we're in Rails, right?
Did you choose Ruby prior to the call of where you were going to host, or did you make the choice on what you were going to build using based on who was doing what in AWS and things like that?
We picked the language first.
Gotcha.
And so at that point, then the natural choice if we were going to do a PaaS was to do Heroku.
Yeah.
And we had heard some specific things of limitations of like they wouldn't let you install a certain gem or there was kind of some constricting stuff. And there wasn't, I don't think AWS, I think they have a PaaS now, don't they? But they didn't back then.
They have you can do websites through S3, through the storage and everything. I don't know if that's just static sites or if you can do like
not a full PaaS web platform.
Yeah.
Lots of components for building out a site. But
my perspective is that AWS is primarily IaaS with PaaS offerings, mm-hmm. where when you look at the other competes, I look at Azure, and Azure is primarily a PaaS platform with an IaaS offering to kind of use that as the, I look at it, for Azure, I look at it as the gateway drug to try and get you into the cloud. It's like, you know, you want to get rid of, you want to go to the cloud? All right, we can just lift and shift and move it over to our to virtual servers. And then if you want to re-architect and stuff, but you mentioned Ruby too. Was there a specific reason why you chose Ruby over any of the other ones? Or
I pushed hard for Ruby. I mean, we considered PHP. We considered.
Did you know it at the time?
I had been learning Ruby and building apps in it for a couple of years prior to starting Drip. So I was fully into the ecosystem, and you know, the further into it you get, the more you realize how many components there already are in the form of gems. Those are Ruby packages.
Yep.
How many, just a really vibrant ecosystem there for pulling together things, so we're not having to constantly rebuild, you know, certain components of the application. And that was the big draw. It's a language that I enjoy coding in, and there is a really vibrant ecosystem.
Right. Super popular among startups. You're looking for outsourced devs. I know that you're using sites like Odesk and stuff. I know they're significantly cheaper than like a .NET person or a PHP person, stuff like that. So
an
abundance of them as well.
So you're on IaaS or VMs in AWS. So that means you guys have got to do patching, and what's the underlying OS that you guys run on?
We're on Ubuntu Linux.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. You have to run your VMs, feed and water them, hook them up, network them, all of that sort of stuff?
Yes.
Gotcha.
That's the downside of it, to be
honest.
Yeah,
there's pros
and cons,
right?
One big downside, yep.
Mm-hmm. Have you run into issues with that? I mean, have you had, like, I guess I've heard one or two times on, for our listeners, there's a podcast that you guys did, or a documentary you did throughout the entire build-out process, and you released it as a podcast as multiple episodes or one big one?
It's one two-hour episode, It's at startupstoriespodcast.com.
The devs that are... We'll make sure these links are in the show notes for everybody as well. And for the devs that are listening to this and wanted to know about how to build a startup or how to go through and build something, it was... I remember you listened to it, and I was listening to it about the same time. You're like, I got to talk about this. I'm like, stop calling me. I got to finish it. It's a great story you're listening to, and it's just like, oh my God, I'd love to do this. And someone documented the whole damn thing. It was an awesome idea that you guys do that. But yeah, there was a part in it, going back to what I started to get to, is there was a part in it where you guys said something about you had issues with at some point where like a database was either overloaded or something. And was it
migrating databases? I remember about migrating databases.
Yeah, we were actually originally hosted. Our database was on Heroku Postgres, which is their more of a managed...
It's a database PaaS, essentially.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it was a good service to start with, and we didn't have to worry about backups. We didn't have to worry about, you know, all the other little maintenance things involved with maintaining a database server. And it got us started, but we actually hit the limits of it pretty quickly. We take in a ton of analytics data, essentially, from all the JavaScript snippets that are installed on all our customers' websites. So we're, you know, a lot of high IO and a lot of complex queries to, so we ran into caching issues, you know, and having to move up through the tiers into a higher level plan just to get more RAM available to cache our data sets. And that was not as straightforward a process as I would have expected from a platform as a service. Mm-hmm. And it's possibly changed now. This was 2.5 years ago, so the platform has probably matured as well. But it was sort of just like not having control of being able to pick, well, I want a server with this much RAM, this much compute. Like, I just know more how to think in terms of servers as opposed to trying to find a plan level that's a bit more abstract.
Perfect fit for you.
Well, it's more comfortable. It's what we're used to. That's how we all grew up doing this stuff. And the next generation of devs are going to be looking at it and saying, no, I just need, you know, this many minutes, or I just need this much memory, this size of an instance. I mean, we're looking at it from more of the physical world that we're coming from.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, now that you're hearing about things like Docker and containerization of applications and deployment and abstracting away so much of the underlying infrastructure and setup and things like that.
Yeah.
That eventually we'll probably not think about it at some point.
Yeah, I mean we're in this transition phase. I mean we're deep into it now, but it's fun. It's fun learning it and seeing how everybody's kind of reacting to it and what different ideas and concepts like Docker that are coming up that are turning real popular.
So getting back to the business side of it for a second, we've talked a bunch about the technology, but from a business side, like, what's your advice for people starting to think about building out maybe a SaaS type service and doing things like cloud development? Is it, you know, because there's a lot of people that we talk with that have lots of great ideas, and the cloud makes it a whole bunch easier to get started and do something similar to this. Were there some sort of key sort of lessons that you've learned or bumps in the road that...
I can't keep this in. This is driving me crazy. You're talking about us.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting it out, man.
Let's start with going to the cloud. It's going to be easy. We're going to do SaaS right off the bat.
Learn from our failures or our delays, I should say.
2 weeks and we're done.
Yeah, so what about some advice for people thinking about getting started with the cloud, with SaaS, web software, and things that you've learned along the way that you think they should take away from this?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is don't start with SaaS. That's typically what I tell people. Like, SaaS is way more competitive than it was 5 years ago, 7 years ago. And, you know, there's a lot of folks doing it. And so just building a basic invoicing system or something is not going to cut it anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
It is hard to do. SaaS is also takes a heck of a long time to build. Mm. It takes a heck of a long time to ramp up. I mean, we're 2.5 years in. We're fairly experienced at this. Mm. You know, I've been down this radio a lot, and it's just the last 6 months where I really feel like we're hitting our stride. That's a long time. We've been doing it full time that whole time, and I know most folks will be doing it on the side. So I would tend to want to start with the smaller, you know, with a smaller kind of one-time sales app, I guess. That's my kind of teacher coming out.
You know, diving like, right in at the deep end.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you're going to be better off building and selling an Outlook add-on or, you know, a WordPress plugin or even if you have an enormous amount of expertise in PaaS, maybe you could do a video course on, you know, Pluralsight. These things are, they can make you some money in the short term and maybe let you buy a little bit of your time and then kind of ease into, I call it stair-stepping, right? Stair-step into SaaS, like stair-step your way up.
It's funny you say it. So yeah, I mean, and this is, for all of our listeners, I know CJ and I, we worked on a startup and we were jumping into SaaS, and we're also listeners of the podcast. And this is not something that is new that Rob is saying. Rob's been saying this for a while. And I think it was in the last few months, it was finally like the slap in the face to me. It was like going, you haven't done it. They've done it. They're saying this. They know something that you don't know. What the hell are you doing? You need to just kind of bite it off. But it's like, what I think that most developers that are going to go to a startup or try and build their own product, what they think is, oh, I can build a website that's kind of run and be able to do this kind of stuff. Absolutely, you can. It's back to the business side of it, the marketing side. It is so much harder, or it's so much more to learn than thinking on just the technical side. And that's where, like, the email marketing stuff or the marketing automation, that's kind of stuff that I think that developers don't understand, that they need to, that you don't know what you don't know. At least that was my experience, not to do a Donald Rumsfeld, but I didn't know what I didn't know. Now I know what I don't know. And it's like, wow, there's so much more to this than just like, oh, you want to make sure you personalize your emails. Like, it's a little bit more business than that.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So what's next for Drip? What do you guys got cooking?
Well, I mean, we release multiple features a week. So there's a ton in the pipeline right now. I think we're talking about doing a little more visual stuff. A lot of our competitors have like a big visual tool builder where you can drag stuff on. We've resisted that because it's easy to screw that up, right? It's easy to do a poor job of that, to try to essentially build like a Visio, you know, thing where you're doing it right in the web. Yeah. To do that well you really need to do it well. So we're thinking that through as to A, whether we want to build it, and B, how we're going to be different than the ones we've seen that aren't very good. You know?
Gotcha.
I think that's on the docket. And then scaling up, I mean, we just spent 6 weeks like optimizing database queries, splitting some tables that got too big, you know, just doing internal DB maintenance.
Yeah.
I mean, about every 6 months, I think we find ourselves spending some time doing optimization just so the app keeps running.
I think as developers, we want to build it right the first time, and you can spend an inordinate amount of time trying to design for something that you're nowhere near needing, right? So you end up getting bogged in the details for some problem that you don't yet have. So have you guys found that as the services scaled up, have there been sort of plateaus where you've just had to pull a pin on new stuff and go, we just got to do hygiene and build to get past those hurdles?
It's really every three to six months, depending on whatever scaling challenge we're working on, where we will be standing still for sometimes a week or two. It's helped to have, early on it was just me as the only developer. Now we have another developer working on the team, so we can still keep some things moving, but we definitely slow down a bit during those times. But yeah, we realized early on we could probably have a full-time person just doing scaling and infrastructure things all the time.
Wow.
If we were trying to get super far out ahead of where we needed to be at the time.
Give yourself plenty of runway.
There's a caveat there too. We are growing pretty fast. I mean, we're adding a lot of customers. So it's not as if the number of people using it is static. The other thing is we're not a typical CRUD SaaS app, right? We're not invoicing software where nothing's happening. We have this real-time analytics. You install JavaScript on your website. So we get literally hundreds of requests per second going into our database. That is a non-trivial thing to support, right?
Akin to people can think of it like a Google Analytics. Yeah. And you're going to be getting constant pings coming back or beacons coming back from different events that need to be. I mean, there's each person coming back. It's not just a collection of a ton of data. It's every single bit of it's personalized to a specific individual, and then to an account. That's a hell of a lot of data.
Yeah. And so I would also say, I'll throw this out there as well, for most apps are not like Drip in terms of their infrastructure needs. So if we were building a really simple CRUD app, I would probably start on a platform as a service to host it as well, because you don't want to be, if you're early stages and you are building a less infrastructure intensive app, you don't want to be worrying about database backups and managing servers and doing your own networking. It's only when you get to the point where you have to start pushing all your boxes to the limits and doing all this custom configuration is when I think it's perhaps better to have more control over the infrastructure.
So, Derek, question for you then on talking along these lines. In terms of the tech side, like going through this entire process, this is the first big SaaS that you've done, right?
Mm-hmm.
What would you say has been the biggest surprise, or one or two of the biggest surprises that you've kind of encountered in this cycle? And wow, that we totally didn't anticipate this that we had to deal with.
That's a good question. Probably seeing how databases behave when you're in a couple orders of magnitude above what most people have. So when tables get to tens of millions and hundreds of millions, things start behaving a lot differently, and you have to start. That was probably one of the biggest, it's expected when you're dealing with large volumes of data, but definitely, database is the bottleneck for us. So.
Yeah, I guess you guys are an interesting app, because when you think about it, right, your actual website and the interface that your customers use is used very infrequently, really, mm-hmm. right? There's no load on that coming from that side. It's all data ingestion and then all background worker processes of some description,
yes.
chewing through the data and sending mail at the right time and doing processing all those rules. So it is kind of a little different than a lot of other SaaS apps, which are much more sort of user heavy and front loaded.
Do you find that when dealing with these levels of these really large size debates and issues that you have, do you find going out and doing research and maybe asking a question here and there and someone gives you a response and you're like, yeah, that doesn't... I'll never forget an instance of this that we did something like this back at a job I was working on with somebody where we were talking about, it was a round table, we were all talking about performance and resiliency of a SharePoint farm. And the one guy's like, yeah, just skip me. I'm in a unique scenario. And it's like, nobody's unique. Everybody thinks you're unique, but you're really not unique. There's just a few people that does. And he goes, trust me, I'm in a unique situation. The person kept pressing this guy. And he's like, all right, tell you what, I've got to maintain a 15 millisecond latency between SOCOM and Tampa and the green zone in Baghdad. And I have to sustain mortar attacks. I'm like, you're unique. We don't have to build for that. But do you find that when you're going research, you're like going, we need to talk to the big guys.
The conventional wisdom, the Stack Overflow threads that you find seem to apply less and less these days. We're doing a lot of, Ruby on Rails has its ORM built in, and we're doing a lot of raw SQL and, working closely with our DBA now, who, we're just constantly consulting with on how to optimize things beyond what a framework can do for you.
Gotcha. Yeah, most people don't have to think about that level of detail, right? In SQL queries, for example, really tweaking just for that specific query.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
What about on the marketing side, the surprise side? What do you think has been the biggest surprise to you, Rob, on working on this project? You've had other startups that you've done, but this one's very different from the other ones that you've done.
Yeah, the biggest surprise over the past 2.5 years, which comes out in that documentary you mentioned earlier, is just how hard it actually is to build something that anybody wants to pay you for. Mm. It really... No matter how many times you do it, no matter how many times I've done it, every time I'm surprised at how long it takes And no matter how much you validate, how sure you are, yeah, these people are going to pay me some money. And then you launch it, and it's like, well, it didn't actually hit the mark.
It's not quite right.
It's not quite right. You got to add. You got to keep iterating. You got to add some features. You know, it takes a while.
And to amplify what you're saying, I mean, just for the listeners too, just a bit of background. I mean, you've got. You have a pretty big personality in like the startup space and the bootstrapping space, and so there's a lot of people that are doing marketing automation and email management stuff, marketing in their different apps. They're using products like Infusionsoft or MailChimp or whatever. You are trying to go and do this on their own. So you had people that potential customers that also knew the same problem, that also knew of you. And so you also even had a head start that you're like, these are my friends. They're gonna, you know, they're gonna buy the right thing, but they're also gonna give me some leeway. So it's like when you say it's hard, it's not like just like I had friends that were also giving me good feedback and they were honest and probably cut me some slack on certain points. So still hard.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That was a big leg up though for sure. We had instant. You know, the hardest part is getting even 10 people or 20 people to seriously use your app, not even to pay you for it, but to seriously use it and say, this is super valuable or this sucks and here's why, here's how you can make it better and here's why I would pay for it. Just to get a handful of people to tell you that is so hard. And so that was a leg up in that I have, you know, a network essentially of folks who would tell me that.
Yeah, that's interesting because developers are notorious for thinking like their baby's the most beautiful thing in the world, right? And not liking feedback a lot of the time, right? Like, you know, we never like being told that our code looks bad, right? And so it must be tough for a lot of people starting out to, they think they've got a really good idea. They think it's the most brilliant thing in the world. They build it and then nobody wants it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. And it's also hard when, if you have a vision for what your product should do and you think that this is going to take you to, you know, wild success and then people get in and start giving you feedback about it. No one's using it. It's, you almost take offense at it. Like, well, you're calling my baby ugly, and B, that's not my vision for this product. I don't want it to be. You know, we originally launched it. It was an email marketing thing that did a few things. It was not a marketing automation tool. And people kept suggesting, build automation rules, do this and do that. And Derek and I would have conversations like, I don't want to build automation. I don't want to be enterprise stuff, marketing automation. And we resisted that for so long. So eventually we realized, wow, that it really is a good space to get into, and being able to kind of, you know, change our vision, update it, I think was a good way, approach.
Very cool.
Right on. So if people want to learn more, where do they go?
Well, you know, as you mentioned, getdrip.com is where our app is. I'm at Rob Walling on Twitter.
Yeah, and I'm at Derek Reimer.
Excellent. We'll drop those in the show notes. We mentioned the documentary 2-hour episode or thing that you guys did. We'll definitely link to that in the show notes. It's a great listen for those wanting to get a little bit of background about the history of Drip and how it all came to be. So we'll link to that in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, and the startups podcast. I've had a bunch of questions too about people saying, you know, how do I use like virtual assistants and stuff, and keep saying is like there's one episode. I can't remember the exact episode number, but there's one episode. Go back and listen to it. You've got a greatest hits page, but this great blueprints and how you hire a dev, outsource dev, how you hire virtual assistants and stuff. It's a really good resource for the devs that are out there that are business or have an entrepreneur kind of spirit. I definitely give it 2 thumbs up.
Appreciate it. Yeah. That's at startupsfortherestofus.com. And we're about 235 episodes in. We release every week at clockwork, about 30 minutes talking basically about stuff that we've been talking about for the last half hour. So yeah, if this is interesting. Yeah.
That's a great show. I've been following, AC got me onto it. I don't know how long ago, a couple of years maybe?
It's been 2 years for me, yeah. I listened to a few episodes. I'll never forget, I had this is kind of the kiss your ass segment of the episode. I got into it a little bit after I got out of owning a training business for a little while. And I listened to a few episodes from a buddy of mine, another buddy, Chris, who also listens to it. Listened to a few episodes and then went back, and it was just like, it was like house of cards for me. Like, I went, screw it, I'm going back. I'm downloading every freaking episode. And we had a summer where we were on the road with an 8-hour drive every weekend for 2 months with one exception. All family vacations. So we were all together. But we binge listened through the whole damn thing.
Did you make your family listen to that?
Oh, my kid, my wife loved it. My wife was like going, is this what's energizing you? She's like, yeah. I mean, you have another podcast called Zen Founder that's all about, it's you and your wife do it. And it's kind of like the behind the scenes of the family aspect of how you deal with being a startup and that kind of mindset and stuff. And so my wife loved it. She's like, so this is what's going through your head. I'm like, yeah. She goes, I can, and so she got an insight into me. I thought the kids weren't paying attention. My daughter, 5 years old, she didn't care. My son at the time was 8 years old. And he's like, I like that. I like that. What did he say? He goes, I didn't really understand that thing. Can you explain what this means and what this means?
I'm
like,
hilarious.
Yeah. Wow. So.
I'm glad we don't. I've heard that some folks listen to it with their kids, and that's one thing we do is try to keep it clean, you know?
Yeah. So I guess we don't really fall into that category all that much.
Not yet.
I never thought about that.
Family show. Hey, well, thanks for taking the time out of your day at Build, for coming on the show. It's been great having you on. Any parting comments and we'll wrap it up?
No, thanks for having us, guys. Yeah, it was really my pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool.
Very much.
Hope everybody got a good insight on what's it like building a startup in the cloud, and yeah, cool stuff. So, well, great links. Everybody go check it out. Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate it.
Cheers.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.